The following audio is courtesy of RTE Libraries and Archives.
It is indeed a privilege and a pleasure to have the opportunity to speak to our friends in Ireland on the occasion of the beginning of the television service. I would like to say that I don't speak for myself, but I speak also for Jordan, which indeed has very many similarities to Ireland. We are both small countries. We both have great traditions. And I think that through television, we could possibly get to know each other better, as indeed television will help always to bring people in the world closer together. We bring you the greetings and the wishes of the people of the Holy Land, and we are very thankful indeed to have this opportunity to speak to you. Thank you.
And that's the voice of the late King Hussein of Jordan, sending greetings to the people of Ireland at the time of the inauguration of this very station, the television end of it anyway, RT. And that was New Year's Eve 1961, going into January the 1st, 1962. The world's heads of state are gathering in Amman today for the funeral of the man who ascended the throne on the 12th of August 1952 at the age of just 16. That's when King Hussein became King of Jordan at age 16 in 1952. Well, there's a man on the phone now who had a kind of a special relationship with King Hussein. Bernie O'Sullivan, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
How did you know King Hussein?
Well, at one time in my life, I had many, many regular contacts with him. King Hussein had two great passions in life. One was amateur radio and the other was flying. He was a great pilot.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, he landed his plane coming back from the United States at the time before last, when people thought he had recovered from his cancer, or at least held it at bay. He piloted his own plane into Jordan.
That's correct. That's correct. But I remember my first contact with King Hussein was actually on the 16th of April, 1970. I have a good record of it because he sent me a card personally written by himself and a photograph of himself operating his ham radio equipment. And that was the first contact. I remember it distinctly because he was speaking with some Americans, and when he finished talking to the Americans, I called him, and many other stations called him also, because he was very popular on the bands. And I was very happy that he came back, and he said, I'd like to talk to the Irish station, because he knew from the two first letters of my call sign, which is EI6AX, he knew from the Echo India part of it that I was an Irish radio ham. And he came back to me, and we had, you know, in these radio ham contacts, you exchange signal strength reports and quality of signal reports, etc. But somehow we developed a kind of a friendship, and for about 5 years, I had many, many contacts with him.
He used to speak to you regularly from his boat.
Yes, my first contact was with him in the palace in Amman, but many times I spoke with him in his. He had a yacht in the Gulf of Aqaba, just right down at the corner of Jordan, and I used to speak with him regularly in that because it was just a coincidence, really, that he was at the time of the evening that he'd fly down there. He'd be down there about 4 o'clock, and he'd be in his yacht in the Gulf of Aqaba, and I was off. I finished work myself at 3 o'clock, and it was just. Some of my friends in Dublin used to be very envious of me because, they couldn't understand. They thought I had some super equipment or something. But of course, it was only a matter of timing because most of them would be working until five. Well, so we were very friendly in the sense that we used to have some great conversations. You know, you'd wonder what some fella away out in the west end of the Beira Peninsula would have to do with the King of Jordan. But, you know, Pat, if there's one thing I've learned from amateur radio all my life, is that There is no class distinction in it. Everybody is known in amateur radio by his first name, and it doesn't matter whether you're a bishop or an engineer or a blacksmith or a riddera on vohir. It doesn't matter. You're all the same. And it's
a bit difficult for a riddera on vohir to have a ham radio equipment on his back.
They're mobile no-pat, you see.
What was his call sign?
His call sign was JY1, and he always signed himself. He's always said, "This is Hussein on the mic. This is JY1, Hussein on the mic." You say, and
what sort of things would you talk about?
Well, you know, we used to talk a lot about. He had a great affinity with Ireland, and Ireland was a small developing nation, and his was a small. And of course, you know. Human beings pattern the same all over the world, and it doesn't matter whether you're a president or a bishop or a taoiseach or no matter who you are, you have the same days of joy and days of sorrow, ups and downs. And he loved to talk about ordinary daily things. But I remember one particular time. We one thing we never talk about in amateur radio is politics. But I remember one particular time I had a contact with him, and he said to me, "Bernie," he said, "I'm delighted to have the chat now," he said, "and to relax." I said, "I'm sure you've heard about my recent troubles." And actually, it was the Examiner that day. The four tires were blown off his car by the Fedin or some subversive organization out there. And things like that, but he was a wonderful, he was a dynamic man. He was charming, and he had a great personality, I thought. And he had his own troubles because I always say the only difference between him and the rest of us was that he had more trouble on his plate than the rest of us have.
He was married at the time, certainly at the beginning of your conversations, to the woman who is the mother of the new king.
That's right. That's right. And he had great English. He was his first wife was an English lady too, and he was. He was an extraordinary little man. And
tell me about my dark Rosaline. Where did that come in?
I'll tell you one time. You see, we talked a lot about patriotic things, and he used to say to me, you know, the Irish, of course, he says, are very proud patriotic people. And I was telling him that, of course, that they were, and that they still had that patriotic pride about them. And one time, I wrote out for him longhand. There were no photocopiers in those days, Pat, way back in the 70s, not around here anyway. I wrote out longhand for him the whole lot of James Clarence Mangan's My Dark Rosaline, the translation, you know, of Roisin Dubh. And he loved it. And afterwards, when he was come back to me, sometimes he'd start, you know, for a bit of fun, he'd start the last verse, obviously, tickled his fancy. He used to say to me, "The urn shall run red with redundance of blood, the earth shall rot beneath our tread, and flames wrap hill and wood," etc. You know? It's amazing. That verse caught his imagination very much.
Why did contact between the two of you stop?
Well, I don't know, really. You know, amateur radio is a strange thing. Sometimes you're on to the same people for a long time, and then for no reason in the world you drift away. I did notice that in later years he got very much in touch with the Western world, with the United States, and I used to hear him on an awful lot talking to people in Boston and Chicago and people in the States, and he was very close to the Western world. He was amazing, I think, you know, that he was a great link between the Middle East and the rest of civilization. You know, he was extraordinary.
Do you think that he was still transmitting up to recent times, or did he give it up a long time ago?
I'd say he gave it up. I haven't had a contact with him now for over 10 years, you know.
Yeah.
I'd say that later in life, you know, I suppose the pressures and the troubles of his very volatile state were weighing on him a bit, you know. Naturally, he was very, very busy.
I was wondering, generally speaking, Bernie, how the world of the ham radio operator survives in the age of the internet, particularly when you can get on the internet and for the price of a local call, you can actually talk to someone using a microphone if they have the appropriate software at the other end.
Yeah, That's very interesting. It was very good comment, Pat, actually. You'd wonder. But, you know, radio amateurs are they're very, very searching and people. They're always exploring new fields. And, you know, I wonder if you ever heard, Pat, of a thing called packet radio.
No.
It's a very interesting form of communication that we radio hams have been using for the last about 10 or 15 years. And it's a new form of you know, the internet now. I'm on the internet and I understand about it, but I enjoy it. But we have a form of internet of our own called packet radio. And the only difference between packet radio and the internet is that in packet radio, we use a special type of modem which switches on our transmitters, and I can type a letter up on the screen, and I have an old friend now, say, over in Germany who lived here with me, near me, a German doctor. I could talk to you for a week about this, Pat, but I talk to him every day nearly, and I can type a letter up on the screen here, and I can just press the button, and my own transmitters will put it on his screen.
Fantastic.
In Stuttgart. And it's the same. In other words, the point I want to make.
You don't
is
need a server. You don't need to pay anybody.
Exactly. And I think the point I want to make really is that the amateur radio was the forerunner of the internet, and that they were ahead of it. They were transmitting the messages that are now going through the telephone lines.
And it will continue, no doubt.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure.
Because you can be talking to the Mir space station, you can be talking to...
Well, actually, as a matter of fact, I have often spoken through packet radio to the Mir station, because we have a special advantage here in Ireland, because it goes from west to east, and when Mir is coming from the west, now I have software which I got from a friend in England, and you can put it up on the screen and you can see exactly where Mir is and when it is coming overhead, and you know the exact amount of time you have to talk with it when it's going overhead.
And they're bored after going over the Atlantic. They've no one to talk to.
Exactly.
And suddenly they hit the Beira Peninsula.
Yeah, so Beira would be first in.
All right. It's lovely talking to you, Bernie, with those memories of the late King Hussein.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks a million. Yeah.